talking today about migration, sexual health, and sexual risk among immigrants to the United States. I'll be reviewing historical and current U.S. migration patterns. Then I'll briefly describe the immigrant groups and then review the various types of migrants. I'll also talk about why we need to study immigrant sexual health. And then I'll draw a link between various migration processes and sexual health. Immigrants account for about 12.1% of the total U.S. population. This is the highest percentage in 8 decades. And in some cities and states, immigrants comprise 1/3 of the population. Present immigration patterns depart from earlier patterns of immigration to the U.S. Note that today, immigration is twice the level of the great wave of immigration at the beginning of the 20th century. This is due to three main reasons. First, the 1965 Immigration Act permitted documented immigrants to petition to bring their spouses, children, parents, and siblings. Thus, virtually everyone became eligible for immigration. You will see this increase in immigrants reflected on the left graph, where immigration begins to climb after 1965. Second, in recent years, there has been an influx of pregnant immigrant women who enter the U.S. to have their babies born here so that their children may reap the educational and other benefits of being a U.S. citizen. Thirdly, undocumented immigration. This is a relatively recent phenomenon, and as you'll note on the left graph, you'll see undocumented immigrants in the gray-colored bars beginning to rise steeply in the mid-1980s. Undocumented immigration is on the rise because of recent restrictive immigration policies. Unfortunately, the September 11 attacks in 2001 have also contributed to several restrictive immigration acts being passed. However, between 2000 and 2005, the immigrant population still increased by 5.2 million. So if we examine the top states where immigrants settle, we'll see that California, New York, and Texas hold the top titles, followed by Florida, New Jersey, Illinois, Massachusetts, Arizona, Georgia, and Maryland. And if you'll note, the numbers steadily increased from 1995 to 2000 to 2005. If we examine the top 15 countries where immigrants come from, we'll see that Latin America and the Caribbean is well represented, as well as the countries of Asia. This information is based on the March 2005 current population survey collected by the Census Bureau, and it includes documented and undocumented immigrants. You'll note that for the most part, the numbers are steadily increasing. The figures in the last column may seem low, but that is because they reflect a 6-year interval versus the other columns that reflect a 10-year interval. Immigrants from the countries highlighted in green will be examined by my fellow panelists. Miguel and Rita will address the Latin American immigrant population, Susie will address the West Indian immigrant population, and John will address the Asian immigrant population. Currently, 1.6 million documented and undocumented immigrants settle in the country each year. I'll read just a few of these captions here. 70% of Vietnamese immigrants arrive to reunite with their families. More than 1/3 of Russian immigrants are adopted children. 1/3 of South Korean immigrants are sponsored by U.S. employers. 20% of New York's new immigrants come from Jamaica, the Dominican Republic, and Haiti. 50% of immigrants from the Ukraine are refugees. And most African immigrants come from Nigeria and then Egypt. So, chances are that you or your colleague or your neighbor or your child's best friend's family will be having Thanksgiving dinner this year. That includes some of the foods on this page. So, enchiladas, oxtails, plantains, General Tso's chicken, yum yum. Okay, people who migrate are called migrants. More specifically, immigrants with an I are people who enter a country to make a new home. Emigrants with an E are persons who leave one country to live in another. So why do people migrate? Push factors are those which cause a person to leave a place because of a problem, such as a food shortage, war, or flood. Pull factors are those which cause a person to move to a new place because of something desirable, such as a nicer climate, better food supply, freedom, work opportunities, etc. Hence, there are voluntary migrants. Those are people who choose to move. There are also forced or involuntary migrants. These are people who are refugees or people who are internally displaced by conflicts, natural or environmental disasters, chemical disasters, famine, or developmental projects. This also includes people who are forced to move because of sexual oppression. An economic or labor migrant is someone who makes a voluntary choice to leave their home country to seek work in another country because comparable opportunities are not available in their home country. Labor migrants, and those known as guest workers or overseas contract workers, are people who migrate for a limited period of time in order to take up employment and send money home. Also, there are highly skilled and business migrants who move within the internal labor markets of transnational corporations. Sexual migrants or migrant sex workers are people who travel and sell sex. Many workers tend to stay only for a few weeks or months in a site and then move on. However, there are two types of migrant sex workers. You have trafficked people, and those are people who are forced into the sexual labor market without their consent or through violence and threats. Then there are migrant workers who voluntarily sell sex. However, it is very important to note that women are often driven into sex work through social, political, and economical imbalances. There's often limited choice for women involved. Also, we make the distinction between documented and undocumented immigrants. And as I noted previously, the proportions of these undocumented and documented immigrants change as immigration laws become more restrictive. So, why study sexual health and the sexual risk of immigrants to the U.S.? Well, there's a long-standing literature on immigrant health as it relates to overall mortality. But there's a gap in the literature on the sexual health of immigrants. Information on sexual behavior and sexual risk that is specific to varied immigrant groups is warranted if effective healthcare interventions are to be implemented and if useful health promotion policies to be adequately informed. Sexual behavior and sexual health is an important component of health and is dependent upon a host of facts, such as cultural perceptions, norms, and expectations, which vary widely among ethnic groups. So why study migration as a process and its link to sexual health and sexual risk? In order to understand how, why, and under what conditions people move, and how this influences their sexual risk and health. Also, examining migration as a structural versus an individual behavioral influence on health allows us to look at the social and environmental context and conditions that create this sexual risk. These structural factors often constrain people's individual behavioral choices. Immigrant health continues to attract research interest, particularly because of various theories explaining immigrant health, as well as the potential for immigrant health to impact the health status of host country citizens. It is important to understand immigrant health needs because of the growing numbers of immigrants and their contribution to national health. So what have epidemiologists, ethnographers, sociologists, and other public health professionals looked at in the literature? And what theories have emerged? In general, new immigrants exhibit comparatively lower disease rates when compared to host country citizens, and some studies say that this is a healthy migrant effect, which is a theory that there is a self-selection of very healthy individuals that can make the trip to the U.S. to work, etc., and that these very healthy people are not an accurate reflection of the total population from which they come, the crème de la crème, if you may. Also, recent studies cite a bias, the salmon bias, which theorizes that immigrants as a group remain healthy because ill immigrants return to their country of origin and are thus not counted in immigrant health studies. Some researchers, however, have argued that the salmon bias does not independently explain the temporal advantage of first-generation immigrants. Others find that some groups experience much higher rates of disease and poor health as the immigrants begin to adopt traditional behaviors of the host country. Yet others argue that the health disparities between immigrants and the host country citizens can be attributed to specific characteristics of the migrating group and to the migration experience. Such characteristics include immigration policy, immigrants' culture of origin, the culture in the host country, length of time in the host country, reasons for migrating, and living conditions in the home country. There is also a second-generation effect, which is the notion that children of immigrants tend to have health behaviors and health outcomes that are worse than their parents. Migration might influence sexual health and risk through multiple pathways. Large-scale population movements and bidirectional travel promote sexual mixing across social groups that can result in increased disease transmission, especially when movement is between high and low disease prevalence regions. This is a constant debate in the sexual health arena, that is, whether the health risk is attributable to factors related to the country of origin or if risk factors are related to the host country. Immigrants also face challenges that predispose them to environments conducive to HIV and STI risk and sexual and risk behavior, including unequal sex ratios as a result of selective migration patterns, long-term separation from partners, social isolation, linguistic isolation, discrimination, poverty, limited access to health services, undocumented immigration status, and financial instability. Gender is a notable structural factor that creates a context ripe for sexual risk. By this I mean the difference in social expectations for men and for women. A good example of differential gendered expectations is the notion of number of sexual partners among unmarried people. In general, if a woman takes on a high number of sexual partners, this is met with social outrage, citing lack of so-called femininity. Whereas for men, a high number of sexual partners is socially acceptable in general as a measure of virility and masculinity. In general, the more traditional the culture, the more these rules apply. Gender roles are closely associated with sexual behavior, and the challenge of sexual communication is heightened by imbalances in gender-based power. This power imbalance may inhibit women from insisting that men wear condoms during sexual intercourse. Traditionally defined gender roles may be different when women and men migrate to the United States, which is often deemed as a more sexually permissive country compared to their countries of origin. Often, immigrants who acculturate may experience a renegotiation of values around gender expectations and gender-based power, and changes in construction of masculinity as well as femininity. For example, studies have shown that sexual risk was increased for highly acculturated Latina teens and reduced for less acculturated Latina teens, which may indicate that sexual risk increases with increased acculturation and length of time in the host country. Another study found that less integration into the community resulted in limited and similar group partner choices, resulting in a smaller sexual network in which sexually transmitted infection can quickly become endemic. This is the notion of assortative sexual mixing, which may contribute to variations in sexual behavior and sexual health outcomes. Sexual relationships usually occur with someone from the same ethnic group, and this assortative sexual mixing within ethnic groups can perpetuate or contain transmission of sexually transmitted infection. This issue of gender and its relationship to health will be addressed further by fellow panelists Susie, Rita, and John. Heterogeneity of immigrant groups needs to be taken into serious consideration. Immigrant populations vary by country of origin, reasons for migrating, migration experience, and the conditions that exist in their host country. Researchers and policymakers need to consider the heterogeneity of immigrant populations when developing healthcare interventions. This brings us to the end of my presentation. Thank you.